Turkey, Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Go on time, no glitches, internet working, knocking wood. It is a minute past the hour on this, the 15th day of April 2016. This program is, as it 99% of the time is, live on the horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. And that's where you go if you want to jump into the chat room and be part of the real-time multimedia madcap extravaganza that is the conversation that takes place during the live hours of the program between 6 and 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, Monday through Friday. Jump into the chat room, pick out a screen name and a password, and there you are. You'll be in amongst the kindly and good-natured and the conversational talents of Anatole and Earther and Jug of Punch and King of Cups and Labor Man and Little Gray and Soapbox Geezer and Trey, all capably moderated by longtime, inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a third stage guild navigator, has folded space to become Man Cave. Longtime, inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Lottie will likely be along shortly. Yes, indeed. More folks wandering in. There's King of Cups. Welcome. And a reminder, as ever, to get the program started, let's do this part first. If you would like to help us support the program by mailing something in via the U.S. Postal Service to our little mailbox at a UPS store where the Klan also has a box, then because the Klan also has a box there and they're a bunch of no-good thieving lowered and snake's belly and a wagon rot sons of bitches, you want to use checks or money orders only made payable not to Bob Kincaid but to the Horn and send them to The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, BECKLEY, WV 25801. Okay, if you want to just shoot me a note and tell me it's on the way, I'll tell Boss Man Wayne he can leave his spider-proof gloves in the truck when he takes his ball bat into the UPS store in case he runs into the Klan. And reaches into the echo chamber to pick up the week's mail.
Yes.
If, however, you prefer the more immediate way of supporting the Horn, well, you know, just run on over to headonradionetwork.com, click on the tab Contribute, and fill out the basic information. Hey, we're still trying to get 100 subscribers at $10 a month. Our ultimate goal is to get 400, but God, it'd be great just to get 100. Click $10, click make this a recurring subscription, and then lo and behold, just fill out the information. You can leave out the part about what you do down at wherever it is you do it, and just get to the next screen where you make your PayPal, credit card, whatever choices. Yes. Yes, Little Gray, you are supposed to be hearing something. We should be streaming merrily along. Oh, for pity's sakes, please don't tell me we're going to go through that again. Not after. Okay, thank you. Thank you, Carol Baker. You're on, Carol says. Thank you. Anatole says you're coming in. Lima Charlie, Mr. Bob. Good, good, good. That was a little worrisome. Thank you, Tom, at FYINation.com. Loud and clear on FYINation.com. And, yes, Lima Charlie in Ohio stand, says Anatole. Yeah, after all the time that I spent on the phone with India earlier today, I thought maybe if I got on the line with Frontier during something more like Merkin business hours, I might not get sent to Mumbai. But apparently the whole thing is in Mumbai. And I'll be honest. And again, let me reinforce. I have nothing against India. I have nothing against hardworking Indian people. I have tremendous respect for that culture. It's just, it's just a little difficult to write. So, I can report to you that Frontier now has its offshore workforce lying outright. Because when I said, no, really, seriously, let's just save ourselves all a lot of problems and send me back to the United States. And I'm not going to do the funny voice because I don't want to be taken as mocking or anything. But I was told, no, Sir Bob. I'm a Canigot. No, Sir Bob. I am in America. I am in McAllen, Texas. At which point I had to mute the call because I was guffawing. And there were several escalations, none of whom could answer the question, who won the 1938 World Series? Of course, I can't answer that question either, but it was fun hearing, no, go Cowboys. To which I replied, not an Indians fan, huh? And there was a moment of painful, sort of embarrassed silence. Damn it, Arthur, don't start that. Wait, that's weird. Am I the only one that's hearing you in Gaelic, Bob? No, you're supposed to be hearing me in Hillbilly. But anyway, okay. The program is rolling. I'm happy. We got lots of stuff to talk about this evening. It is, of course, being the 15th of April, 2016. It's a Friday, which means it's Friday on the front porch. And we've got about $300 to raise this evening to close out the week okay. Fundraising has been a little more difficult than usual over the past month and a half, 2 months or so. And in large part, that has to do with the fact that it's political year. This is not the Horn's first political year, or its first presidential political year. Political seasons are always hell on the rest of us who have to get by on contributions because American political campaigns kind of suck all the oxygen out of the room. But we got about $300 to raise this evening, and tons and tons and tons of bills to pay. In fact, if we could raise more than that this evening, it would be truly awesome because there is a program note here. I have to go back to Atlanta. Let's see, where's Friday? Yeah, there's one. I have to go back to Atlanta a week from Monday. On a trip for Coal River Mountain Watch. And consequently, that means being gone pretty much that week. And so we're going to have to, at some point in time, we're going to have to raise a week's worth of funds for the week that I'm not here so that we don't finish April on our knees. So, yeah, what would that be? Basically, that means we're going to have to raise $400 a night next week, and if we could get a jump on that, it would be very, very nice. So you know, that's out there on the horizon. Thank you, Robert. Live in Australia, loud and clear. I do appreciate it. Good to know. I enjoy being mid mornings in Australia. It's kind of fun knowing. Well, just right. And knowing all the many different times that people are participating around the globe in our little conversation. So so the Cyphering and the Gazettas. Let's call it $400 this evening. That's 10 at 40, 40 at 10, 1 at 400, 2 at 400, 4 at 100, 8 at 50, 16 at 25, 32 at 1250. 64 at 6 1/4, and 128 at $3.13. Yes. Now, just a general note. Like I said, Friday on the Front Porch will begin here in about 48 minutes. And if you have never participated in Friday on the Front Porch but would like to, then you are welcome to chime in. By sending a contact request on Skype, and Skype is very easy to use, send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk, S-P-A-R-K-Y-D-U-N-C, and send a note along saying F-O-T-F-P, Friday Front Porch, Front Porch, Porch, something like that, so that Sparky will know that you're not a Nigerian widow who is trying to give him $10 million if he'll only send them $520 handling fee. Okay? Okay. Now, do we have to talk about the pageant last night? I guess at some point somebody will want to talk about the pageant last night. I watched it. Over on Chicken Noodle News on the computer box, and I came away with the distinct impression that if Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton lost any more of her composure, she'd have been she would have been clutching those pearls like Barbara Bush at a Beyonce concert. I mean, she was hateful. Well, then I guess we'll just have to deal with it, Carol. Carol says, what if I am a Nigerian widow? I'm asking for a friend. Well, ask your friend the Nigerian widow if she has $10 million, and then we'll have fundraising taken care of for April, okay? I mean, geez. I thought... If for no other reason, than the fact that she really did sort of lose her cool, and both of them, Hillary began and then Bernie followed suit. They were laughing at each other, and rolling their eyes and making faces and. That's one of those reasons that I don't call these things debates. They're not debates. They're pageants. If the audience could, if looks could kill, the audience would have gone away in pieces, in baskets, when they gave that rousing standing ovation to Bernie at the end of things, and she just glowered at them like she hated them. Which, you know, she may. One never knows. Not a lot of, you know, not a lot of substance, not a lot of, not a lot of earth-shattering information. Bless her little heart. Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton has dug her heels in on the issue of the speech transcripts, and she's not going to release them, and nobody can make her. Yeah. And I want to be clear about something on the speech transcripts. I personally think she should release them. Not because I think that there's anything earth-shattering in there. Look, she took $225,000, $275,000, I forget what, to go and stand in front of a bunch of Goldman Sachs employees and tell them that that they are the elect of God, that they all shit ice cream, and that nobody in the world would have Frisbees and Wheat Chex but for their patriotic entrepreneurial spirit. Because that's what you do when they pay you $275,000 to come and speak to the people who lunch. But the fact of the matter is, it's the fact that the issue is out there and it won't go away. And she has become hidebound, and the devil himself, or maybe Jesus H. Christ, or both of them in tandem, could not make her release those transcripts. Oddly enough, Bernie flew across the Atlantic and delivered a speech sponsored by the Vatican. And you know what he did? Released the transcript immediately. No big deal. They're just there. And, of course, he got another of those hateful, withering looks when he said, okay, I'll release my transcripts when everybody else does. And he said, okay, done. I'll release the transcript of every speech that I've ever given to, Goldman Sachs, you know, the people who crapped on our economy and ruined the lives of millions of Americans. There were zero, so now we're done. Good God, that got under her skin. And at the same, and it was very awkward for her. It's always very awkward for her when he criticizes Citizens United. Because she has to make mouthy noises like she doesn't like Citizens United either, at the same time that, you know, her campaign treasury is, cashing more checks. Yeah, Carol, I agree. Carol says, I think those speeches contain exactly what we think they do. And that's not, It's the cantankerousness that's become the issue, not the content of the speeches anymore. But probably more than anything else, and you know, we did this math earlier. Poor doer of math that I am. Oh, by the way, during the winter months up in Australia, Robert reminds me. We're on at 8 a.m. During the summer months up there, we're on at 10 a.m. There are a couple of weeks where we're on at 9 a.m. due to the daylight saving switch. Oh, can we please not just have a little standardization? God, I feel like Billy Pilgrim. I've come unstuck in time, Pooty Wheat. But it's not the content of the speeches at this point in time. It is the fact, the obscene fact, and it is obscene. There's no way, there's no getting around it unless there's a special category of things that it's okay for Hillary to do and still call herself a pragmatic progressive. And last night she trotted out Colin Powell and Kinda Sleazy Rice and Madeleine Albright and hid behind them like a little sort of human meat wall, and said, "Well, they paid the same money to them. They want it. They." I'm doing a voice. I'm sorry. I'm not allowed to do a voice when we're talking about Hillary. You learn a lot about the state of the world when you've been Secretary of State, and they just want you to come and tell them all about it. Nah, they want you to come and tell them that they shit ice cream, and that God smiles upon them as the elect, and that the world wouldn't have shoelaces without them. That's what they want to hear. But it is the fact that one minimum wage worker working for 13 years. I mean, let's try to visualize this in a real world situation. If a minimum wage worker had started working on January the 1st, 2003, and had worked 40 hours a week, every week, never taken a vacation, because, you know, paid vacation is it's a crazy commie thing here in the United States that nobody wants. Who wants a paid vacation, for God's sakes? But if a minimum wage worker started working on January the 1st, 2003, and worked 40 hours a week, never took any vacation, and never spent a dime, and worked all the way through to January the 1st, 2016, that minimum wage worker would have earned as much money as Hillary Clinton earned in 1 hour telling a bunch of pigs from Goldman fucking Sachs that they shit ice cream. And that is the obscenity. That is what is disgusting. Unless there's a special little corner of the universe where things like that aren't obscene, and it's inhabited pretty much only by Hillary Clinton. And yes, Arthur, you're absolutely right. She also wrapped herself with President Obama's flag every chance she got, except when it came to Syria. Well, when it was necessary to use him, President Obama became that human meat wall behind which she hid. She also piled up the shot up into chutney tiny pieces of the children massacred at Sandy Hook Elementary and hid behind them like a wall made of human meat. And that was probably the most disgusting part of the evening. I wish she was a better candidate than she is. I truly do. I wish I could listen to her speak and feel like she gave a tinker's damn about somebody who makes minimum wage. But I don't, because her policy decisions over the course of her career say that she pretty much doesn't. And, you know, it's not just one speech. It's a lot of speeches. It's $21 million worth of speeches. And I'm not even going to... Oh, hell, why not? Let's get out the Gazetta machine. Queer. 21. Ought. Divided by 7.25 equals, holy shit. In order to make the money that Hillary Clinton has made giving speeches, a minimum wage worker would have to work 362,068.96 days, and we are goddamn sure not going to round it up to 362,069 days, because that wouldn't be fair. 362,068 days. And just for the fun of it, let's find out what that is in years. Oh, well. Sorry, peons. You are never going to earn as much as Hillary Clinton has earned giving speeches. Because even if we take the Bible as literal, and we accept that the story of Methuselah is really, really, no kidding, real, we find out that Methuselah himself could not have earned that much money. Why? Because, well, he might have. And maybe had a, he would have had a few days, he could have. Methuselah could have. But only Methuselah. Methuselah is said to have lived to the great age of 969 years. Nope, sorry, Methuselah, you lose, buddy. I was wrong. Methuselah himself could not have earned enough money at minimum wage to make what Hillary Clinton has made speechifying, because Methuselah only lived 969 years, and a human being would have to live 991 years. Depressing, ain't it? Kind of tough on that kid who walks in the door and says, "Hey, Dad, I just got a job at Walmart." You know, when he's like 16 years old. And Dad says, "I'm proud of you, son. Now you just keep at it for the next 13 years and you can earn what Hillary Clinton earned in 1 hour of speech making. And sock it all away, son. Tell you what, I'll continue to pay for all your groceries. You won't have any rent to pay. Yeah, you can keep living in your room. You can borrow the car to go back to work and stuff, but don't get married. Don't spend any extra money. And 13 years from now, boy, if you work real hard, you will have made what Hillary Clinton made in an hour." Because, you know, the rest of us just aren't quite as special. And see, if you're a progressive person and you want to defend that, you kind of have to throw all your progressive values out the window, and I'm not willing to do that. Huh. All of this talk about Hillary, and lo and behold, warm weather's upon us, and there's a stink bug in my studio. Irony. Yeah. But let's not camp out on Hillary's speeches. That's about enough of that. Today, former President Bill Clinton, easily becoming one of his spouse's most annoying surrogates, went to the Bronx at a rally. Although, it's not like a Bernie rally where, 20, 30,000 people show up. And he was upset at Bernie. And nobody pisses and snarks quite like the big dog. Because last night in the pageant, Bernie said, "Oh yeah, Secretary Clinton cleaned our clock in the Deep South. We got murdered there. That is the most conservative part of this great country. That's a fact." And it also happens to be a part of the country that will never, probably never in our lifetimes, vote for a Democratic nominee for president. So that kind of renders those votes in the primary process, you know, sort of moot. I mean, they're an expression of preference, but they're not an expression of ability to deliver a state. And, of course, when he said that, Hillary stood there at the podium and made faces at him. Because it was about making faces last night. Because if there's a takeaway on last night's pageant, it is that CNN finally got what it so desperately wanted. CNN finally got an audience that was behaving in many ways like an audience at a Republican pageant. I mean, they were howling and hooting and yelling and cheering and hissing and booing and everything in between. They were behaving just like just like an audience at a Fox debate for the GOP. And that gave Chicken Noodle News something to talk about, in addition to the rest of the for-profit media today. So CNN was the big winner. But today in the Bronx, Bill Clinton was downright, shitty.
Look, I really sympathize with a lot of these young people who are, you know, excited about being told that there is one explanation for the misery of America, and that is the greed of the Wall Street banks.
Well, that was certainly dismissive, wasn't it? Because I'm sure that the misery of America has nothing to do with the Wall Street banks. I mean, just ask the people who lost their fucking homes in the Great Recession. I'm sure they were personally responsible for that. I'm sure that was entirely their fault. Right. And apparently the big dog doesn't think much of young people. So, you know, go ahead and shit on them some, Bill. You're gonna love the effect of that, aren't you? Yeah.
Look, I really sympathize with a lot of these young people who are, you know, excited about being told that there is one explanation for the misery of America, and that is the greed of the Wall Street banks. But the truth is, Wall Street is smaller, and New York City is growing like crazy, led by the Bronx and Brooklyn and Queens, and entrepreneurs in New York that are in Manhattan that are diversifying the income. Right?
You'll notice that there's really no applause going on there, and this is taking place at the College of Mount St. Vincent in the Bronx. And he has to throw out a right, and still, you know, no testify, Brother Bill. None of that. And Wall Street is smaller. Well, I guess Wall Street is smaller, because a few of the firms that, you know, burned the economy to the ground sort of burnt themselves to the ground in the process. But that's okay, so because the big firms were there to pick up the pieces, the very valuable, valuable pieces. Wall Street's smaller, right? Yeah, young Arthur, young people, bless their heart. Right. Nothing like a little sneering condescension from the man from Hope.
Look, I really sympathize with a lot of these young people who are, you know, excited about being told that there is one explanation for the misery of America, and that is the greed of the Wall Street banks.
Oh, and by the way, that's not what's exciting them, Bill. If that's what you think is exciting them, then you're even more out of touch than we thought you were. I'm pretty sure, based on some of the things that I've heard from the so-called millennials, and I don't like calling people millennials because I don't like calling people, I don't like calling individuals group names. But based on my entirely anecdotal evidence derived from my communications with said younger people, not young people, it's not like we're talking about, you know, nine-year-olds, although he's talking about them as if they are. What young people are excited about is being told that this country that they are rising through their adulthood in doesn't have to be the shitty, fucked up, miserable mess that it is, and that with their help, it can be made better. Certain members of a certain generation who have a memory of, say, being younger people during, say, the 1960 election for president, which was said to have been a turning point for the big dog, when he actually went to Boys State or Boys Nation as a delegate from Arkansas and got to meet John Kennedy, it put him on his path of national public service. He was young and he was excited by a young president who was saying, "Ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country." He was inspired by a young president who would go on to say, "We will get to the moon in 10 years. And that young president, John Kennedy, didn't say, "We'll take an incremental approach to getting to the moon, and in 20 years' time, we'll have a rocket that can leave orbit." But see, Bill has been so sucked up into the Wall Street universe for so long now that all he can see is a bunch of DFHs who want free stuff. And he is every bit as get off my lawn as John McCain ever was. Condescending. Patronizing. And not, and utterly disconnected from what is really exciting to young adults in this country about the campaign of Bernie Sanders.
Look, I really sympathize with a lot of these young people who are, you know, excited about being told that there is one explanation for the misery of America, and that is the greed of the Wall Street banks. But the truth is, Wall Street is smaller, and New York City is growing like crazy, led by the Bronx and Brooklyn and Queens, and entrepreneurs in New York that are in Manhattan that are diversifying the income, right? So, what are we going to do about this?
Well, after he said right, there was at least one clap that was, you know, maybe somewhere up in, like, you know, Jamaica, Queens or something. It was kind of hard to hear.
And the thing that always struck me about Hillary is that she was just saying, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? What am I going to do? About the only thing that disappointed me about that debate last night was the sneering reference that her opponent made to the mammoth victory she won in the South. Oh, that's just the South. We know how conservative they are. Well, excuse me, but...
Oh, by the way, did you happen to notice last night that Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton promoted, of all states, promoted North Carolina out of the South? She said, yes, we won in the South. We won in Alabama, Mississippi, blah, blah, blah. But we also won in North Carolina and Illinois. You know what? That may be the first time in American history that North Carolina and Illinois have been used in the same sentence, except for any statement that says North Carolina and Illinois are both states of the United States of America. And Bill says that Bernie wasn't sneering. Yeah, Bernie was taking it somewhat humorously. Oh yeah, we got our clock cleaned in the South. And of course, there's an explanation for it. And frankly, from where I stand, Senator Clinton's success among Democrats in the South really didn't have much. Well, here, let's go back to the big dog for a minute.
Democrats need to win Florida and North Carolina to get elected, and they are not. They are states of the future, highly diverse. And she won a big victory there. She won in Mississippi partly because they have a mayor in Jacksonville, an African-American guy, who is the embodiment of the future, who helped her.
You'll notice that. The mayor of Jacksonville, Mississippi, is an African-American guy who is the embodiment of the future. Now, I have not checked my Rand McNally Atlas lately to find out if there really is a Jacksonville, Mississippi. If there really is a Jacksonville, Mississippi, it's probably like population 112. He meant Jackson, Mississippi. But for as important as Mississippi is to Bill Clinton, He renames the state capital. Yeah.
The one in Alabama, 93% of the African-American vote and a majority of the white vote.
That. She won in Alabama, 93% of the African-American vote and a majority of the white vote. And my thesis is that race actually had very little to do with why Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton won in the Deep South, or the South. Because unlike Hillary, I am not willing to promote North Carolina out of the South, and I would suggest that were she or Bill to perhaps have a conversation with any member of, I don't know, the LGBT community or their allies there, they would find out right away that no, North Carolina is becoming more Deep South than Mid-South. Witness the aforementioned potty bill. But race had very little to do with her success in the Confederacy. Education had everything to do with her success in the Confederacy. Whether it's North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia Stan, Mississippi Stan, Alabama, Tennessee Stan, Arkansas Stan, Louisiana Stan, it didn't matter. She won big in those states for the same reason that Donald Trump won big in those states. And I have not heard anybody else make this observation, and I'm pretty sure it's correct. She and Donald Trump won big in the South for the same damn reason, and that is that the South is the single most poorly educated region in the country. And let's remember, I can say that because I am a Southerner. You know, that's one of the fundamental rules about the South is you can't criticize the South unless you're from the South. Yeah? And that's all there is to it. It's not because... It begins and it ends right there. It is the least educated part of the country. We can test my thesis to a certain extent. We can test it on May the 10th. When we have the primary here in almost level West by Cole, Virginia Stan. What I suspect we will find is that T-Rump will win an overwhelming majority in the Republican primary. Whereas Bernie will probably win, yeah, maybe 5 points, maybe 10 points in the Democratic primary. And that will be because T-Rump will carry the under and poorly educated here. And there might be a slim, maybe bigger majority of better educated West Virginians who will carry this state on the Democratic side for Bernie. Let's just mark that down if I'm wrong. Yeah. Look, remember me? I'm the guy who doesn't have a problem saying he was wrong. So let's just mark that down. April 15th, Bob says Trump and Bernie in West Virginia, and that Trump will carry the day for the Republicans because of the poorly educated status of this state. And this state has a terrible, horrible, awful educational status. But anyway, now, so let's finish up. Let's finish up with Bill defending the honor of the South.
Because when she was a young woman, this is one reason, she went to Alabama for the Children's Defense Fund to help shut down private segregated academies that were pretending to be public schools. And it took a lot of guts to go in and pose as a racist mother who wanted her kid in an all-white school to prove that they were ripping off the taxpayers and violating the law.
And one kind of wonders how much posing there actually was.
And she did it, and they knew it. And where I come from, the proof is in the pudding.
Well said, big dog. Well said. The proof is in the pudding. So, there are some little baby Clinton grandchildren on the ground now. And the proof will be in the pudding. in the solid gold bowl in the 6,000 square foot Manhattan apartment when they get to schooling age. Because does anybody for a goddamn minute think that Hillary's grandchildren are going to go to a public school, P.S. what the fuck, in Manhattan? Because we'll have to make a long-term wager out of that, but I'd be willing to bet that they're already that Chelsea and whatever his name is are already going through lists of schools that are good enough for the grandchildren of a former president and first lady and presidential hopeful. Just, you know, saying. Yeah, you're right, Bill. Proof's in the pudding. And we'll wait till the pudding is done, and we'll see how it all proves out. But it's not just Bernie, and it's not just Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton campaigning in New York. Oh, by the way, courtesy of Bruce via email. Slogans then and now. Then, it's the economy, stupid. Now, hey, Bill, it's the corruption, stupid. I don't give out the email address often enough. If you got something you want to say and you don't want to do it over the phone, you can always send me an email to Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid, @gmail.com. But no, the allegedly reasonable Republican, John Kasich, has been campaigning in New York City. And somewhere along the way, somebody told John Kasich that there were lots of potential Kasich votes in the Orthodox Jewish community there in New York for him. Him, Kasich. Yesterday, he toured a matzah bakery. And he walked into a Jewish bookstore in Brooklyn earlier. And that's where he kind of got into trouble. I mentioned this briefly toward the end of the program last night, and the audio is too good not to share. Apparently, from what I can tell, Kasich is standing there with a big box of matzah, and after this clip, so on Wednesdays I am, Uber Pope, Ultimate Imam, but there's a rabbi in there somewhere. And so I'm going to invoke my powers to declare the hockey puck kosher, because you're going to bite, you're going to want to bite down on it real good if you happen to be Jewish. For that matter, if you happen to not be Jewish and just happen to have a full functioning brain, you're probably going to take a chunk out of the hockey puck too. Really, I mean, set up. The term used in the headline of this article is Jesus-splaining. That really says everything you could possibly want to know.
Volvo matzah is literally hand-baked. No residue to be allowed in contact.
any previous facts.
This is, and he's showing, he's showing an absolutely fascinating, this guy is, maybe he's the owner of the bakery or whatever. He's showing him, you know, how they make the matzah, how they roll it out, so that, I think I heard the words, so it won't rise because it has to be unleavened or God won't like them or something like that. Everybody likes a nice cracker. I love matzah. And bless his heart. Bless his heart. John Kasich's just taking it all in and standing there looking at it like a cow looking at a new gate. Really? So, get back to it.
Do his job.
Okay. I go and make one matzah.
Come stay here.
There, no, you can like sit.
Come stay in the side over here. Stay in the side, don't worry. I'll let the people walk. Tzadik, you stay there. Don't move. Let's go.
Putting the matzah in, then he's taking the matzah out.
He puts the matzah in and he takes the matzah out. He puts the matzah in and he shakes it all about. Yes. What if the hokey pokey is what it's all about? But anyway.
He's the only one that's allowed to do it.
Ah, he's the only one who's allowed to do it. Damned unions! See what that... See what the unions do to a bakery. He's the only one who's allowed to do it, and they'll probably go on strike if somebody else tries. That's why we need right to work in matzah bakeries. The Republican position, of course.
Okay, maybe the press probably doesn't understand this. It's a wonderful, wonderful holiday for our friends in the Jewish community, the Passover.
Yeah, that's what it is. It's a wonderful, wonderful holiday for our friends in the Jewish community, the Passover. And you'll notice he said the press probably doesn't understand this. Oh, God. Oh, this is rich. Oh. But really, I mean, you've already got the shovel in the dirt, John. Keep digging.
Because
that's another one of them highfalutin, newfangled subway trains. Ain't got none of them over in Ohio.
The great link between the blood that was put above the lamppost, the blood of the lamb.
Put above the lamppost, was it? As Marty notes, Passover, wonderful. Not if you're the firstborn of an Egyptian. And of course, there was a little bit of a dust up at the Democratic pageant last night when Bernie said the unspeakable, to wit, that Palestinians should be actually treated like human beings. And Hillary was left in kind of a quandary. I'm kind of a Hebraophile. I'm a student of cultures. I mean, the blood of the lamb on the lamppost. Lamppost? There were lampposts in Egypt? Oi! Anybody want to help? I don't want to get too far out of my depth here, and I'm already pretty much out of my depth. Oh, I thought the blood of the lamb went on the door or the door facing or the lintel or. No, not the lentils, not the fucking little bitty beans. You know, cross beam across. Lamp post. Meanwhile, courtesy of Carol Minion, queen of the minions. The Passover. When did it need an article? When did it need the lampposts? I think he said lampposts. Oh God, it started in the chat room now. Lottie says, LED lamppost, Bob. Light emitting dung. You have to light it on fire. Meanwhile, Stockton Larry says, Jesus, Bob, what's next? The right of Palestine to exist with defensible borders? Tracy chiming in, who is married to a Jewish lady, who says, doorpost! That's all it is. I've never gotten a two-word email from Tracy, the lady cab driver, ever. Doorpost! Yeah, okay, it's only going to get worse. And you know we're going to go from the blood of the lamb to the blood of the lamb, right?
The great link between the blood that was put above the lamppost, the blood of the lamb, is Jesus Christ is known as the Lamb of God. It's his blood, we believe.
Wait, John, buddy, are you running for president, pal, or are you trying to bring about the salvation of the Jews? Well, you know, Jesus will come back if we do that. Kind of helpless here. You know, the lamppost, you know, that's what we call Jesus, the blood of the lamb.
As we need a limit of density.
Look, we don't want to be doing anything to disturb.
So we're going upstairs to room 204.
Okay, should I go with you?
Yes.
Okay, let me go with you. Come on.
We're going.
This is in the bookstore. It's a little less noisy than out there with all the heathen subway trains.
I want them to come out of the room, please. I don't need the press disturbing the kids.
Oh, wow. They took him upstairs to a kindergarten, and he said, I want them to come out of the room. That's kind of like how Jesus says, behold, I stand at the door and knock, if any man hear and open the door unto me. Oh. Jew-splaining, John. Don't do it. Too late. Oh, listen.
Okay, here.
God, that's so sweet, those little voices.
The governor wants to know what this picture represents.
The White House!
Whoa!
Who's going to live in the White House?
Me!
Not you, John, not you! We rehearsed this. You're supposed to say John Kasich is. No. Bernie! The Jewish guy!
Well, I'll tell you what. If I live in the White House, would you all come and visit me?
Yeah!
And if he flies to Saturn, will you fly to Saturn to visit him too? Because that's about equally likely. God, I hope I don't wind up eating those words. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, okay, so before we wrap up the filibobster, you remember how Bill was talking all about how North Carolina's all progressive and stuff, and Democrats have to win in North Carolina to win the presidency, and how Hillary promoted it right out of the geographic South last night. This is the story of Alexandra Judd, who was interviewed by WBTV television. Alexandra Judd is a server in a restaurant. Alexandra Judd is also a lesbian. And Alexandra Judd has, among other things, participated in rallies against HB2. You know, the potty bill, the discrimination bill. Yeah. And so she's kind of not okay with all the discrimination running through North Carolina at the moment. And so she was waiting on a group of customers at the restaurant where she works in Charlotte this week, when, as happens all too often in the Deep South, she got stiffed by the group she was serving. It wasn't a big tab, it was just a $23 tab. But instead of writing in a tip where it says tip in big bold letters, because people who work serving meals in restaurants don't even make minimum wage, they are expected to make it up in tips. This group of upstanding, God-fearing, Bible-believing, Christ-centered Christians wrote on the bill, "Praying for you." And where it says tip, wrote a Bible verse citation for Alexandra Judd. It was a Bible verse citation to Leviticus chapter 20, verse 13. Which says in the King James Version, which is the only version authorized by Almighty God. I think we'll need some reverb for this. "If a man also lieth with mankind, as he lieth with a woman, both of them have committed an abomination. They shall surely," and don't call me Shirley, "be put to death. Their blood shall be upon them. Thus saith the followers of the Prince of Peace." Among other things, she said that the group was very rude. Well, of course they were. They were Christians. She took to Facebook, Alexandra Judd did, and she said, "I don't care what anyone says. This is the most disrespectful thing you can do. Don't pray for me, darling. I have everything I could possibly want and need in my life. And I would add parenthetically, because she's not going to heaven with, you know, them. If a man also lie with mankind as he lieth with a woman, both of them have committed an abomination, they shall surely be put to death, their blood shall be upon them. Well, there's some more of that forward Bronze Age thinking. Meanwhile, Brother Deacon Asa says, well, lamppost isn't that bad, Bob. I was thinking Kasich had walked into the Jewish deli and ordered a ham and Swiss. Not so bad, Bob. Not so bad. Oh, give him a chance. I was once in the company with the wonderful, multi-talented, mellifluously voiced Guy James on a frozen night in Washington, D.C., the night of January 20th, 2009. When a guy insisted upon walking into an Indian restaurant and asking if they served beef. I refused to let Guy ever forget that. He later said, I swear, Bob, there's an Indian restaurant around here that serves beef. As God is my witness, I thought turkeys could fly. Ay, ay, ay. So I don't know. I don't know, big dog. I think maybe I would back up just a little bit on thinking about the about North Carolina being quite so, you know, progressive. So, hey, let's fire up the extraordinary ordinary roundtable, shall we? Jump right in. Sparky has already lit the Bob signal, and you are welcome to jump in. We had a string of really awesome Fridays on the front porch, and just because of the way things worked out last week with scheduling, we didn't have one, so we're back to it. If you have to get in via telephone, you are absolutely welcome to do so. You can dial 304-6, dial, please. Anyway, the stress line is 304-663-4676. The Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable will be able to hear you, but you won't necessarily hear them. Okay? So there's that. Oh, what do you do for... Wait, I got it. Yeah. So we'll take a break and come back. This is listener-supported, I can't emphasize that enough, this is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn, and I'm Bob Kincaid.
Big doggy. Let let the big dog in. Let the big dog in.
Told you I had it. I had it. Yep. It is Friday on the front porch on the Horn at 16 minutes past the hour, and it is time to fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable and see what's shaking hither, thither, and yon. Good evening, Sparky.
Good evening, Bob.
How in the world are you?
Oh, I'd be fine if the pasture out back, if we mow the hay.
Are we? Do we have hay fever?
Oh, a little bit.
Yeah, it's a real thing.
I grew up here, so it's something I learned to live with.
Well, you never developed the immunity, huh?
No, I always said that only in Red Bluff. I get away from this town, and I'm okay.
It's the funniest thing, because the same thing happens to me here. You know, I spend long enough here, and I get a little grim, a little depressed, and then I go somewhere else, and I happy right up. I don't know why. Maybe it's the pollen.
I don't know, but it's been a saying only in Red Bluff. Well, it's rodeo weekend here.
Rodeo. Oh, is it the great big giant rodeo festival?
Yeah, it's the 95th annual Red Bluff Roundup.
Oh wow! And so
it's one of the biggest rodeos in the country.
Yeah, I was going to say. I mean, it brings in thousands, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I just recently added something to my list of places I want to go and things I want to do. I want to go to the Hatch Chili Festival in Hatch, New Mexico.
Hatch Yarn is not a great place to sharpen skates.
And by the way, I had a note in from Jim, who apparently has found another translation of the Book of Leviticus. It says, "And a man who attires himself in a pantsuit is an abomination without a picture hat." That from the prophet Diane of Vreeland. Very well. Well done.
I had one of those moments today.
Yeah.
Religion, politics.
Mm-hmm.
An old guy driving a pickup right in front of me, right across his tailgate. It's in big, bold letters. "We elected the Antichrist."
Oh, you just almost, you almost want to follow him home, don't you? Yeah, what's the matter with you?
You poor thing.
Bless. No. How many years have we been doing this, Sparky? No, that's when you go, "Bless his heart." We're going to teach you to be a proper redneck yet.
I don't know. It might be pretty hard being from where I'm from, land of fruits and nuts.
No. You just look at him and go, "God love him. Bless his heart." You know, it's been a while since Kate on the Front Range was here to deliver a lesson in Southernism. I may have to check in with
her.
She
kind of went underground, didn't she?
Well, she had
Montana.
Yeah, she did. She had some health issues, and I think she's bounced back and stuff. But still, I need to check in and get a good long enough for a little lesson or something. Oh, by the way, I had a note from Ron in Raleigh. He said, "Do you think old John Kasich's been near this that many Jews, like, ever?" And I'm guessing no. Lamb post, lamb chop, yeah, whatever. Yeah.
Isn't that where you tie your lamb up to the post? A hitching post, for horses, but it's a lamb post?
Yeah, that's where you tie up your lamb after you've ridden through town and pulled the number six.
There you go. Hey, how's it going, Bob?
Good, good, Billable Rick. How about you?
Oh, I am billing away here, trying to, so...
Well, we don't want to see you go through that living hell you were in last August and September.
Oh, God forbid. That was horrible, I tell you. You know, I'm planning a trip to Jacksonville, Mississippi, you know. Okay. Where is it in relationship to Jacksonville, Florida, do you know?
It's about 1.5 miles because it's on another planet.
Okay, is it near the land? Where is it in relationship to the lamppost?
I don't know if they got any lampposts in Jacksonville, Mississippi, but they've got a really progressive mayor, an African American guy.
Well, there you go. There you go. Yeah, so the pageant was interesting. I'm sure CNN got good ratings on it. That's all they care about, you know.
Yeah. You know what crossed my mind, Rick, when they were talking about the economic when Bernie was talking about the economic collapse and stuff. You know what? Of course, one of the really nastier parts of the economic collapse. If you think back to like 2005, 2006, even earlier than that, remember all the ads on places like Chicken Noodle News for countrywide home loans?
Oh God! Oh, don't get me started on that. But go ahead.
Well, if I go ahead, I'm going to get you started on that, Rick. You pick.
That's okay. Please do. That's just a figure of speech there, I suppose.
No, but that, you know, they were partly responsible out there hustling home loans for all they were worth.
Yeah.
And they had a deal with the big banks, and it was all just one big Ponzi scheme.
Yeah. Right, all the liar loans and everything else.
And you know, I just wondered if there was anybody sitting up there in the thin oxygen section of the of wherever it is that CNN's headquartered now, going, "Hey God, we made a fucking mint advertising stuff."
Yeah, they probably are. And you know, incidentally, the CEO of Countrywide lives in the next door community to mine. Just like, you know, almost a stone's throw away, La Cañada is where he lives.
Well, it may be La Cañada, but it ought to be locked up tight. I was going to say, I trust there's no prison in the community next to yours.
Oh, no. He actually has a name. He has a sports complex at a private Catholic school in La Cañada named after him, the Anthony Mozillo Athletic Pavilion or something like that.
Didn't that used to be a browser, Mozillo?
Yeah, Mozilla. Yeah, it's Mozilla. Yeah. And, you know, he, of course, didn't have to go to jail. I'm sure he paid a big fine, but, you know, or the company did, you know, he probably paid something. But
and then they wrote it off on their taxes.
Right, right. I mean, if you have a big enough bank book, you can pretty much avoid prison in this system we have. Isn't that great, Bob?
It's a beautiful thing. I mean,
America.
Goldman Sachs pays $5 billion that they then get to write off on their taxes.
Well, yeah,
and nobody, miraculously, nobody even has to do some stinking 1 year in Club Fed.
No, of course not. No, it's, you know, I think DOJ, as regards corporations, it's kind of become a fundraising apparatus for the U.S. government. That's the sense I get, you know, in terms of starting investigations against big companies for wrongdoing and so forth. I mean, as long as they get the money, you know, nobody has to go to jail. You know?
Right. I mean, let's see. It's a four word inquiry. Did the check clear?
There you go. And these corporations look at this as just a cost of doing business, basically, is what it's come down to. It's
well, I mean, my experience watching this kind of thing, Massey Energy once agreed to pay a whole bunch of money, but they pled it down with the feds from, you know, 100 times that or 1,000 times that. I don't know. You know, as part of a plea bargain. I wonder what Goldman Sachs would have had to pay if they had actually paid what they actually should have paid. I mean, if $5 billion was what they negotiated down... I mean, come on, Rick. They negotiated down to $5 billion.
probably maybe a half a trillion or maybe a trillion. I mean, who knows, Bob? I mean, you know?
I mean, $100 billion. Cost. I mean, I'm sure they didn't negotiate it down from like $6 billion to $5 billion.
No, of course not. We, you know, you could probably add a couple of zeros down as far as what their initial exposure was. You know, they probably negotiated down to like 1% of what the government was seeking or, you know, something like that. But, you know, it's just, you know, it's very disheartening when you see this happening. And, you know, it was sort of mentioned, Bernie kind of mentioned the $5 billion fine that Goldman Sachs had to pay. But I think he should have hammered it a little more because it was like news of the day pretty much, as I recall. You know, that news just came out, I think, yesterday.
Yeah, it was kind of a big deal.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, he didn't, you know, he could have like, he should have gotten the bloody shirt out more on that one, I think, you know? So, anyway, that's, you know, that's my opinion. And, you know, I guess the thing about the debate, I don't think it changed the dynamics of the New York race, unfortunately. I mean, Steve from New York could probably weigh in on this as well. You know, if anything, the sense I've gotten from the polls, I mean, assuming you can believe them, is that Bernie was pretty much down by 10 points maybe a week ago. Now it seems like he's down by 15 or 16 or more, which, you know, I kind of find hard to believe. But, you know, part of the problem is the whole news cycle. He's lost the news cycle a number of times in the past week, most recently with the whole comment by Dr. Song calling, you know, Hillary a corporate Democratic whore, or at least referring to...
No. Wait, Rick. Let's not do the Clinton campaign's work for them. He did not call her that.
Well, no, Dr. Song did.
No, Dr. Song didn't.
Well, he was referring to a type of politician.
He said, yeah, as long as we keep electing corporate Democratic or Democratic corporate whores.
Right.
He did not at any point in time say Hillary Clinton. He didn't say Hillary Clinton or as Hillary Clinton or Hillary Clinton is a... I took his meaning to be... I thought he was talking about Congress personally.
Well, I heard the sentence or two he said before that, which did mention Clinton. And then after that, he mentioned, you know, corporate Democratic whore. And, you know, I think it doesn't help the cause of Sanders when that language like that's used. It would have been better to use a word like a corporate Democratic sellout or something like that, which obviously doesn't have a sexist language.
Yeah, right. That's exactly, you know? It's sexist language. It was a terrible mistake.
I'm just saying optics. It looks bad from a optics perspective, and you know most people don't get into the weeds like you, I, and the rest of the Horn listeners do with regard to politics. You know, they're busy earning a living. I mean, I am too, but I mean this is one thing I like to do. And you know, if all you're hearing is, you know, things about like that, then you know if you don't have much information about who to vote for, you might say, well, gosh, I don't really like, you know, them calling Hillary a whore. I mean, obviously she's very hypersensitive about that whole thing. And you might recall that Randy Rhodes lost her talk show on Air America for calling Hillary a fucking whore.
was that what it was? That's so long ago, I can barely remember. Yeah.
That was during a stand-up comedy routine she did in San Francisco for, I guess it was Green 960, which was the progressive radio station at the time, like a benefit for it. And she lost her show and had to basically scramble to, you know, create a new show for herself, a new network, essentially. So, you know, and Hillary, believe me, made some calls, I'm sure. I get the sense that she does not hesitate to call, you know, network executives if something is said about her that she doesn't like. You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't mean to defend her necessarily, but I'm just saying.
Oh, no. I don't think you are, Rick. I think it would have been best had Dr. Song not said what Dr. Song said.
Yeah.
And you know, you're talking about, you know, you wish that Bernie would have hammered on the $5 billion a little bit more. I would have liked to have heard a little more talk about climate change. It was one question and gone over. The single greatest existential crisis facing the human species. And, done.
I mean, we'll deal with that in 20 years or whatever. We'll phase that. We'll go to a bridge fuel. We'll transition to transition to solar. It's like, well, at some point the transition has to end and you have to just sort of jump all into the pool.
Bob? Surprised she had the nerve to use that phrase, bridge fuel.
Yeah, well.
I mean, it cost the Sierra Club a ton of its own credibility when they made the bridge fuel argument and accepted tens of millions of dollars in exchange for doing so.
Yeah.
But apparently it...
Didn't T. Boone Pickens start that?
No, the fracking industry. It was an advertising slogan. Yeah, but clean coal.
He was big on gas. He was like...
He was promoting that, I think, Sparky, as like a... kind of an alternative fuel that's like less polluting and better for the environment.
You wanted to take the trucking fleet and make it all natural gas. But he was talking like it was a bridge fuel to the 21st century back then.
Yeah, and it's a bridge to extinction is what it is.
Bob, who needs to drink clean water,
Well, I mean, if we need clean water, Nestle will sell it to us, right?
There you go. Yeah, exactly. Well, another thing that I would have wished Bernie had done is he hasn't really been able to give a satisfactory explanation as to his position on guns, because he just seems like, when that question was asked to him, like he did at other debates, it was sort of almost like the deer in the headlights look. He just doesn't seem to really be that comfortable with, explaining, how, his positions on guns. And he could have pivoted a bit more and talked about how, in the crime bill, he of course was in favor of the assault ban, the ban on assault rifles. But then he should have talked about the mandatory minimums that were in that, although he voted for the damn bill. That's part of the problem.
And look, anybody who runs from the House or the Senate is going to have that problem, because you have to vote on stuff. You can't just raise your hand and say, here.
Right.
You know, bills are seldom standalone affairs.
Oh, I know.
Carol and I had that conversation earlier this week. There was a perfect example of a lawsuit that absolutely should go forward. And if only Bernie had known about that case coming out of Odessa, Missouri, it would have been a perfect teachable moment.
Right.
In fact, we were talking about it, and I was thinking about you when we were. I mean, the news came out yesterday, and Bernie mentioned it, that a Superior Court judge in Connecticut said the lawsuit against Remington Arms can go forward, and he refused to dismiss it based on their motion that was grounded in the assault weapons immunity law. And he said, no, it goes forward, but you can always move to dismiss it on the merits. And that's the thing, Rick. In order to hang, in order, well, there's a nuance here, and we'll get to it. But in order to hang liability and damages on a defendant in a product's liability case, you have to prove some defect in the damn product, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Some negligent design, some negligent manufacture, or intentional for that matter, some failure to warn.
Yep.
And, what kind of warning could Remington have put on this firearm? Warning, Mother Lanza should not take a nap so that her half-mad son Adam can blow her brains out and take this firearm and go and murder a bunch of innocent children. There's not a jury in the world that would say they should have done that.
No. No.
And I'm not defending Remington.
No, it's the nature of it's the way the law is constructed.
Now, I don't know. I don't know what the negligence laws are like in Connecticut. Darlene might. I mean, I don't. I'm sure they're not a pure contributory negligence state, but I don't know if they're comparative or whatever. The only way that this is a problem for Remington is if they have to stay in the suit. And the jury hangs 1% liability on them, and then joint and several liability kicks in, and the parents can collect every damn dime from Remington Arms, and then leave it to Remington to sort it out with I don't know, Adam Lanza's estate and Mother Lanza's estate and the gun shop where Mother Lanza the doomsday prepper bought it.
Yeah, I don't know.
And just realistically, I bear no love for the gun industry.
No, I know, but unfortunately, that's the way the laws have been written, and that's with this immunity that manufacturers have. It just is. It's very difficult to pin them with liability, and even without an immunity bill, Bob, I think under the libel. I mean, you have to sort of, you kind of have to show that it was a reasonably foreseeable consequence of them selling this weapon that some madman would get a hold of it and massacre a bunch of school children.
You know what? I'd rather make that argument, Rick.
Yeah,
I think that's a makeable argument. But just to say that because you make a firearm is an inherently dangerous, ultra hazardous instrumentality, but that triggers strict liability, and I don't think there's anywhere. I don't think there's is there a jurisdiction that recognizes that?
No, I don't think so.
I mean, Jesus, we have a hard time getting courts to recognize that blasting within a mile of somebody's house is an inherently dangerous. Ultra hazardous activity here in West Virginia.
Yeah. I mean, I guess what pisses me off is that we even have assault weapons in the U.S. I mean,
there's the issue.
From 1994 until 2004, when the law sunsetted under the dim leader's lack of leadership. The number of mass killings in the United States went down quite dramatically, if I'm not mistaken, compared to what they were before the law and what they've been since the ban was lifted. Am I right, or is this just my imagination?
No, I think you're probably right.
Yeah.
Well, hi, everybody. It's Alex.
Oh, hey, Alex. Hey. You updated your Skype.
And about the gun thing, I just in my personal just to throw in something that's apropos to the gun discussion. I work with vets, and practically all of them have firearms. And sometimes I'll ask them, what I do is I make sure if they say they have a firearm. I say, well, first of all, do you have gun locks? And if not, do you have them in a gun safe? If you have your firearms, do you keep the ammunition in a separate place? This is what I do by rote. And then I have gun locks in my office, and I give them out with brochures on gun safety. Sometimes I'll ask the vet, depending on the situation, or if they volunteer the information, they'll say they keep a gun usually loaded by their bed. And I'll ask them, well, why is that? I never try to come off as being judgmental or anything, but I'll come out with sort of this innocent, and why do you do that? To elicit some information, because I'm secretly very curious about this. You know, I'm curious about this, and I want to find out what the hell's going on with these folks. And 100% of the time, the response is, I am afraid somebody is going to come in and harm my family or take my belongings, and they are so paranoid that they keep a loaded gun by their bedside. Once in a while, the other day, someone said, I'll ask them, what kind of guns do you have? Or they'll volunteer. Oh, I have 2 rifles, 3 pistols. Well, just this week, someone said, oh, I have an AK-47.
Oh, sure. Those those things are easy to get. They're cheap. They're cheap, 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 cheap.
Right. So I didn't say
anything.
Are
these all errors?
But I'm thinking, what the fuck? God damn it.
These all errors of veterans?
What was that?
I mean, are they...
Oh, errors?
Errors. World War II, Korea, Vietnam.
Yeah, right. I will have to say that the majority of the vets, the eras, the majority of the vets that have the gun, I'd say it's equal between the OEF, OIF, well, let's just say from the people in their 20s to their 60s, it's pretty equal in my experience about keeping the gun loaded by the bedside. As far as having more than one, the majority are the younger vets. And the ones with the high-powered stuff, it's the younger vets.
Alex, is that do you ask those questions as part of your job, or is that just something that you've taken interest in doing and giving out gun locks?
When I do my assessment, my intake assessment, to see how they're doing as far as, I do an assessment and find out what's going on. I gather information. I connect them to mental health services. In the process of my assessment, I ask them many questions. And one of them is, do you own firearms? Because it's a safety issue. And then I go on and ask, if they have them in a safe place. Do they have gun locks? And then I get into some, once in a while, I'll, find out a little bit more information. And so that's the context in which I have these discussions with them.
Okay. Yeah.
I just have legacy guns.
It's very disturbing to me to deal with this. I mean, to see this, it's very disturbing to me.
Well, you work in the realm of psych, Alex, and as such, you've just done a good job of laying out the underlying mental states and rationales that people have for why they do this. And it goes, that goes to the heart of something from a couple of nights ago. The woman in Jacksonville, Mississippi, as a matter of fact, Jackson, Mississippi, who took her 2-year-old to the ER and dropped her purse on the floor while she was futzing around over at a vending machine. And when her purse hit the floor, her Freedom Protector just went off, and she shot her 2-year-old in the face. Okay,
yeah.
And the child survived, and she's going to have is a superficial disfiguring wound for the rest of her life on her face. That's all she's going to have. That was the present value of that moment. But there is, by definition, a background. And that's what you're talking about. Why did mommy feel so afraid that she had to have a loaded weapon in her purse? Okay?
Yeah.
Because
I say this to myself all the time, because I live in Arizona, Stan. I had that experience with that asshole with that gun in his holster at the bakery. Women wearing pistol earrings, talking to vets every day with caches of guns. And I'm thinking, what the hell are making all these white people so afraid? Racism and aggression and mean-spirited fuckheads. But I think it's ingrained in hatred and racism, and it goes from there. And also just our cultural craziness that is America. I mean, that's what I come up with.
And I mean, what else are you supposed to come up with?
I don't know. And then when I ask them, part of my assessment is, what kinds of activities do you enjoy? What do you like to do? Overwhelming majority list, amongst other things, target practice.
Target practice.
The gun culture is so strong, and the vets that come back are entrenched in this weaponry culture. It's unbelievable.
But I mean, we owe it. I mean, those of us who actually think about these things, we owe it to ourselves to answer the questions. I mean, see, I don't know the ethnicity of the mama who shot her 2-year-old in the face in Jackson, Mississippi. But if she's white, you want to take a guess who she's worried about?
Yes, somebody who's a little, has more melanin than she does.
You're right. And now we get, and so now we drill down a little bit further, Alex, and we ask, why is that?
I think there's an inherent...
Who has fostered? What organizations, what people, what groups have fostered this desperate fear that says the only way to live in harmony with people of darker skin than you is to be prepared to shoot them dead at a moment's notice? Who's done that?
Ooh. I'll NRA, I'll, KKK, yeah. You name it.
Yes. So if we're going to treat the disease and not the symptoms, what does that mean?
People like us don't have the power to change it. Yet again, we always come back to the source.
But
we
if it's going to but if it's change. Going to be changed, no. If it's going to be changed, where does that change have to take place? It has to take place in confronting your KKKs and your Concerned White Citizens Councils and your NRA and your gun lovers of America and your gun humpers of America and the gun industry. It absolutely has to take place there. But I mention all of this because the way we make those confrontations is through our Congress. And, you know, since Rick kind of opened the door to a little bit of a critique of political strategies and stuff, I've said it before, I don't give a damn what either Hillary or Bernie says about what they're going to do about the guns, because they are not, they're not practitioners of magic. They can't do a goddamn thing without a Congress that wants to work with them.
Yep. Yeah, that's the thing. I mean,
so
it's like a broken record.
I see no end to this, but I see no end. I see no end.
No, there isn't.
Like we always say, how many people have to die or be maimed? I mean, if all this has happened, all these people, innocent people, have been shot and killed, and here we are now, and nobody cares. And it just continues on and on. What is it gonna take? Obviously, human lives. Well, the amount of people dying doesn't matter to the majority of our populace.
I mean, I've said, Alex, that you pretty much, you know, in order for any change to occur, I mean, I don't wish this to happen, but something has to happen to these elites, these NRA assholes, and somebody needs to go into one of their conventions and blow a bunch of the membership away. And then maybe at that point the NRA would change its position, or maybe not. I don't really know, you know? You know, obviously Congress...
I can't even countenance a statement like that, Rick, and I mean, I'm not jumping on you.
Oh, I know, but I'm just saying
But no, I don't think that would do that. What that would do is that would trigger a civil war.
Ah.
Okay.
I really think so.
You know, that would just be a Reichstag fire.
Hmm. Did anybody? I think Alex listened to it. The video I put on the Horn site the other day. It's just nothing but 911 calls of mass shootings.
No. Yeah.
Yes. And I belong to I have a Facebook feed from my friend it's a Facebook feed of everyday shootings all over the country, and they post, you know, all these different ones constantly. That 911 tape that was heartbreaking.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, basically, it seems to me that America has become a Second Amendment free fire zone. That's the problem we have.
It is, Rick. But I mean, in larger answer to your question, if polling data means anything, then it's pretty clear that somewhere north of 70% of the American people want the beginnings of solutions. Mm-hmm. Now that number falls right through the floor if you say take away all the guns.
Yeah.
And right now Hillary is positioning herself as what the right wing likes to refer to as a gun grabber. If Barack Hussein Obama, the Kenyan Muslim usurper, who has not taken away a single gun, is still portrayed as a gun grabbing liberal, well, mm-hmm. then Hillary is going to be umpty gajillion more percent of that. Okay, one.
Well, Obama better hurry up. He's only got about another 9 months to grab those guns, Bob.
It's gonna, and it'll take that long to get all the Republicans into the FEMA camps. but the second part of that is, you know, can we apply some common sense? And I've been talking about this for a while. We've talked about it on the Friday on the Front Porch. You know, the insurance issue.
Yeah.
You know, the gun show loophole, straw man purchases. These are all things that, for the most part, the American people don't seem to object to, but you can't get it past the Congress because, as that Princeton study from a couple of weeks showed, the popular will of the American people means absolutely nothing. I mean zero in consideration of how public policy is enacted by the Congress.
Whereas
the will of lobbyists means everything.
Right, it's because of money.
That's true. And also at the same time that is true, the masses of our the majority of our populace, you know, you could say the will of the people is not being addressed, and the lobbyists, and simultaneously, the majority of the citizenry either A, are apathetic, B, aid and abet it, you know? So you have that, you know? At the same time, I mean, you might take polls and you might get some feedback from some of the populace, but the majority keep either voting for these people or not participating. So it continues on and on because there's a small majority of us and a big majority of the populace that's either apathetic or aiding and abetting these people.
But Alex, I don't think that's the case. Like I said, if you look at the
then
poll,
why do these?
If you look at the polling
why
data,
why are they selecting them? I mean,
now you've opened the larger can of worms, where the House of Representatives concerned.
Not why do they keep electing them, but why do they keep getting elected? Rather,
where the House of Representatives is concerned, you have to gerrymandering. And then where the Senate of the United States is concerned, oh, look, voter ID.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. And then, you know, there's the simple mathematics of the NRA and their allies will provide enough money to any given candidate to make sure that anyone who wants these sensible solutions cannot possibly win, because media makes a difference.
Yeah. Well, you know,
this
speaking
sounds
of
like
that,
a dystopian,
Bob,
a dystopian Fahrenheit 451 mixed with 1984 and Lord of the Flies all in one.
That's a good image, Alex. Yeah.
Why, thank you.
Yeah. By the way, I've got a note here. Bob, your cool-headed rationalisms regarding the finer points of gun-related matters and the law is an instance of madness itself beyond the surreal. An instrument of power like the Second Amendment is direct evidence for this. Its retention and interpretation to the outcomes of schoolyard massacres, arming of the mentally ill, the absurdity of concealed weapons statutes, etc., is dangerous insanity. When do the arguments pro or con start to sound like the babbling and gibbering of the haunted asylum itself? On the other hand, it always sounds a little different on the other side of the world in daylight. Good luck with all that, really. I cashed in my chips ages ago. Regards, Steve in China. Yeah, say whatever you want to about China. You're probably not going to be a victim of a mass shooting perpetrated by a possibly mentally ill young man who took his doomsday prepper mother's Bushmaster rifle, shot her as she slept, and then went and chopped some children into chutney with it. That ain't gonna happen.
Do you know what I think also, Bob and everybody? There's so many places you can go in your mind about everything or why this is going on, right?
Yeah.
And I think the inception, you know, when we go all the way back to the beginning of this country, quote unquote, and who the people were that came here and all the oppression and genocide and everything that has come to this point of what this culture is. I mean, I think it is a creation of a culture that has, then this is the result of this culture.
Well, we can't have the large, it's impossible to teach history to the American people, apparently, despite the best efforts of people like Dr. Bill O'Brien. And that having been said, there's such a cacophony of outrage that gets roused if we explain to people that the reason the Second Amendment exists has nothing to do with redcoats and everything to do with killing indigenous people and slave hunting, and they, woo, goddamn, South will rise again, and we're off and running, okay? That's part of it. As Stockton Larry says in the chat room sometimes, here's a fun true fact for the evening. Andrew Jackson was referred to as one of the more humane slave owners of his day in Tennessee. He owned hundreds. And yet, at the same time that he was said to have been more humane, he once placed an advertisement in a Nashville paper offering a reward of, I think, $100 or something like that for the return of a runaway slave. And he gave a description of the individual, the human being, and what the human being was wearing. And then he offered the reward, and he said, and over and above the reward, I will give $10 for every 100 lashes laid upon the said runaway slave, up to 300 lashes and $30. That's a humane slave owner.
I take it you haven't been watching Underground, Bob.
I haven't yet. Haven't watched much of anything lately. Just been kind of worn out.
I just put the two together if you've been watching it. No spoilers.
Yeah, no spoilers. I'm still trying to get around to this latest episode of Outsiders. We had a response from Darlene in Connecticut in answer to my previous question. Yes, Connecticut is a modified comparative fault state, and the plaintiff can recover from the defendant as long as he or she is found 51% or less at fault in the accident or incident. So that, you know, and yes, they have contribution among tortfeasors, or what is called joint and several liability. So it'll be interesting to watch this play out. But I still predict that Remington Arms will be dismissed by the court absent some showing of a defect in manufacture, a failure to warn, a negligent design. It almost seems like it kind of has to be.
Is this connected with it? Remember with cigarette smoking? Oh no, that was different because they knew that it was harm. See, that's interesting. Those manufacturers knew that cigarettes killed people. They made them anyway, and then when people got sick and died, they sued them, and finally.
Well, no, it's not just that they knew. They knew and suppressed.
Right.
See, there's.
Well, this is obvious. Guns are. Yeah, it's a different situation altogether. But not completely different because guns are there to harm and kill people. So, you know, I know it's a little different, but it's just, I mean, they're doing their job, obviously. So that's where therein lies the problem.
Yeah, but Rick, wouldn't you have to show that the purpose of the purchase was to commit a crime?
Bob, Rick's busy right now.
Oh, okay. Well, that's fine then. Well,
he's on a client call.
Understood. Well, that's why he's billable Rick. Look, we just crossed the 8 o'clock barrier. We had at least $300 to raise this evening, and we have raised what's that New York term, Alex? Bupkis.
I never used that's a generation prior to me, but I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. I just wanted to get it right. But no, we're at zero. And that would mean if we're going to try to raise $400 a night next week, that would mean entering Monday with a like $700 fundraising goal. And oh my God, why would we even bother? So that's where we are. We need to raise at least $300 tonight. $400 would be better. So there's that. We've got people in the chat room who have or in the Horn Malloy Skype Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable who have not been heard from. Good evening, Jules.
Good evening.
How are you?
I'm doing. I'm managing. How are you tonight?
I think we're all pretty good. It seems like the conversation's going pretty well.
It does seem like it does. Talk of guns once again. I don't know. It seems like you couldn't sue an automobile company if I went out and bought an automobile and ran over someone. So I don't know how you can sue a gun manufacturer for buying a gun and shooting someone. I mean, although, you know, that's the only purpose of some guns.
You know, I mean, you can sue a bar if, and I think this might be the closest analogy we have, you can sue a bar if the bartender serves you and you are obviously intoxicated.
Yeah.
And you go out and hurt somebody, you can sue the bar.
Yeah.
But you cannot sue the liquor distiller.
Nope.
Because there's no showing that there's any exposure, any negligence, any intentional conduct there.
I mean,
they intentionally made the liquor, but there's no reasonable rational connection between intentionally distilling the liquor and the fact that a bartender served too much to a patron of a bar.
Mm-hmm. Well, isn't there an unwritten rule a bartender can cut you off, kick you out of the place, and whoever you want?
Right, and I mean that's
under the influence.
That's well, I mean, you know, hell, they can throw you out stone cold sober if you're an asshole. But the you know, the rule has developed and arisen that, you know, we're not just going to let bartenders and bar owners serve people until they're sloppy, falling down drunk, and then hand them the keys and let them, and because then you're putting a loaded gun in their hands.
Yep. This is true.
I know there's some places in Reading where they'll take your car keys. And they'll call you a cab when you have to come back the next day and get your keys.
And your car.
And your car.
Oh, you're not going to go too far with your car without your keys.
That's true. Hey, quick little interjection here. In an effort to take a bite out of the fundraising hole, Ralph's
longtime friend of the program, and host of the Malloy thread every night over at Democratic Underground, Ralphs has offered a $50 challenge, saying she'll put up $50 if somebody else will, in any combination, 10 at 5, 5 at 10, 1 at 50, 2 at 25, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. If people will put up the $50 to go with it, and maybe we can get that rolling and deal with the deficit and not have a brutal end of the week. So thank you very kindly, Ralphs. Well, thank you very much indeed.
There we go. How very kind. Thank you.
It's a great start. It's a wonderful start.
Thank you very much.
I've had
an interesting.
Oh yeah, go ahead, Jules.
Yeah, I've had an interesting week. I was driving to an appointment this week, and I had someone flag me down on one of our main roads. I was pulling up to a stoplight, and someone's waving at me, and I'm like, okay, you know, and I roll my window down, and they're pointing to the back of my car furiously, and I'm like, well, maybe something's wrong with the back of my car, you know. I'm like,
that's never a good sign.
Yeah, you know, I'm like, well, okay, one of my sensors is off of my one of my tires, and I thought, well, maybe that tire's low. And so I'm like, okay, and I roll my window down, and this guy yells out of his truck, he's like, for the love of the living Lord and our country, please, ma'am, reconsider. I'm like, what the hell is he talking about?
Oh, and you've got a Bernie sticker, don't you?
Yeah. Points back again. Please reconsider, ma'am. And it's my Barney window sticker.
See, that's why I don't put a sticker on my car, because I've been threatened. My car, I had a car that was keyed. People came over to me and verbally threatened me. So that's why I feel I'm scared to put any advertisement on my car, although those other folks can do whatever they want. So what you went through, Jules, is my worst nightmare, because at any point somebody can shoot us. I mean, seriously.
I was absolutely flabbergasted. You know, and this is a rather busy road, and I actually recognized the truck, because I had passed it on one of the road that I pull off on to get onto the main road, and he pulled down to the the stoplight and turned and went back the other way. So he had literally followed me off the side road onto the main road just so he could pull over, you know, flag me down and harass me about my window sticker.
That's dangerous, like, oh, Jules.
Hell's bells, Jules, you what, you're in Taliban, you know. Indiana. That's a call the cops moment.
Yeah, that's horrible. He didn't linger. He said what he had to say, and he rolled his window up and went on his way. I didn't even have time to respond. And I was like, okay, well, that was interesting.
Yeah, I'm terrified. I have to be very careful. You know, I can't advertise anything. And when I talk about, I have to be very careful to what I say. You know, I have to be very, very careful. You know, that's the environment I feel we live in.
I had no idea. I really didn't think people around here would, you know, say anything, do anything. We have an office here, a Bernie office here in Fort Wayne. So, I mean, I really didn't think anyone would say anything, do anything, comment anything. I
was in the last week when we didn't have this deal. When coming home, I was in the Burger King drive-thru, and there was a Prius, one car in front of us, with a big old Bernie sign in the window, and I was just yelling out, "Right on, Bernie!"
Yeah, I was in the parking lot of a supermarket a few weeks ago, and I was walking down from my car, and I saw a car with a big Bernie bumper sticker on the back, and a guy was sitting in the car, and I went right over to him. I said, "Hey, brother," and, you know, "Hey, yeah," you know, it's like.
Well, my son's had one on his car for I don't know how long, and he's not had any problems, and he's all over the freaking place with his. And I happened to go out, you know, I this is the first time I've had my Jeep out since I've had the sticker on it. And it's like, oh my God. Jesus Christ Almighty.
Well, this is the way it is, you know, for us.
But well, no, I mean, honest to God, though, I find fascinating. There we go. The approach. For the love of God, madam, reconsider. Except it's the wrong accent.
For the love of...
Where's my Dijon mustard?
It was just... it was so funny the way he worded it. For the love of the living Lord in our country.
Oh, that's what... Oh, yeah, that's even better.
Tracy, are you here?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
You're a little broken up.
Hey.
I'm in Orange County, so they might be angry that I'm a black woman, a black lesbian in Orange County.
I love the internets, though, because black lesbian woman came through. The rest we lost.
Yeah.
Hey, Tracy, dear, not so much yet. But my God, I have never gotten a two-word email from you before. And with the John Kasich business, that was so funny. Doorpost.
Doorpost. Jesus fucking Christ.
Have we ever gotten a Jesus fucking Christ from Tracy before?
No, Bob.
You know, we keep
when
a list.
He was talking about the blood of the lamb and the lamb of, I'm like, no, don't do it. Don't do it. Oh, he's going to say Jesus. Oh.
Oh, we had you there for a minute.
I'm fading in and out.
Okay, you're good now.
Orange County.
Whatever you're doing, don't stop doing it.
Yeah, but she's moving. She's a moving
Tracy,
target.
Do you hear me, Tracy?
Okay. Can you? I can hear Tracy, you guys. You just can't hear me. Apparently.
No, you're good now. You're good.
I can hear you.
Oh yeah.
Tracy, okay. Thank you for your food. I just want to say thank you for your food porn. You have excellent taste.
Okay, now I can't hear. I heard food porn. Did I hear food porn?
You heard food
thank
porn.
You.
She said
thank you.
Alex said thank you for your food porn. You have excellent taste.
Oh, okay. Okay, cool. Yeah, no. But did you guys hear me say Jews for Jesus? Maybe that's where he thought he was? No? Not so much?
Not so much.
Oh, this is
Uh-oh.
But I do want you to know, Tracy, that I've been getting a lot of... Oh, lost her again. I have been getting a lot of mileage out of... Shut the front door. That... I owe so much linguistically to the Horn Family Community Congregation. And, you know, Hot as Fish Grease. I've gotten a lot of mileage out of that one. And, hey, thank you very kindly. We've had a match to Ralph's challenge. And we will hopefully we will roll it forward from there. So that's $100 down, and either two or three to go, depending on if the more the merrier. But thank you very kindly. And as soon as I know whether or not the contribution was anonymous or not, I'll let you know who it was, or I won't. So we got about 46 minutes to do about $200 to $300. Thank you very kindly to Ralphs for getting it started. Thank you, Ralphs, very, very much. You're a dear friend of the program. And Charlie disappeared for a minute, but Charlie's back. Hey, Charlie.
Hey, how's it going?
Better now that you're back.
Yeah, I lost my Skype connection. Originally, I tried to call you, but I was right in the middle of downtown Nashville, and that didn't work out very well.
Well, you can't call me. You just got to IM me, please.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I can see where trying to do, you were trying to Skype and drive?
Yeah.
That's a little spooky, a place, especially driving anywhere in Nash Vegas.
Well, I was downtown on Broadway and coming back home, and it was wild down there. I just tried to get out of the city as quickly as I could.
At this time of day, I couldn't agree more. What took you on the Broad?
I had to work on an ATM at Vanderbilt University.
Oh, so would that qualify as Upper Broad?
It's where Broadway and West End fork out. It's right in between Broadway and West End.
Okay. I love the city. I hate the traffic.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I try to stay out of it as much as I can.
I've been on an early 19th century history kick lately, Charlie, and that took me wandering off into the history of Andrew Jackson. He's kind of a mixed bag. The first president ever to advocate the end of the Electoral College.
I didn't realize that.
Yep, he did. And the other thing I learned was that somewhere out there are 200 limited edition special release Gibson guitars made from the wood from downed trees from a 1998 tornado at the Hermitage, some of which Andrew Jackson himself may have planted. And by Andrew Jackson himself may have planted, we mean Andrew Jackson told the people that he purported to own to plant. Jesus.
Yeah, the Hermitage is out kind of east of Nashville. It's like you're heading up Old Hickory Boulevard.
Hence the name of the road.
Yep. And I don't know. I just try to stay out of Nashville as much as I can. That place is crazy down there. I guess I'm just used to smaller towns. I don't know.
And the radio market's crazier. Do you listen to the radio in your car when you're? Oh my God.
Oh yeah, I love to hear the. There's one guy in the morning. I mean, he's hilarious. He's one of these right wingers. And just some of the crap he comes up with, you laugh so hard, you're just about run off the road. I mean, I can't even see how a sane person could think that way.
Local guy?
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah, it's, what's the guy's name? Michael Del Giorno.
Oh God! That guy's got a he's a loon.
You've heard him.
I've heard and heard of. He came to Nashville from somewhere else. And,
yeah, from Oklahoma.
Yeah, he's got some crazy ass history of you know doing well crazy ass things. Let me look him up. Yeah,
I didn't hear Jules' dogs drinking water.
No.
No. Usually
they're outside right now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they're being behave outside right now. So I've got five large dogs, two Newfies, and periodically you'll hear them in the background lapping at the water bowl. So.
Oh, okay. Here, it took me a minute, Charlie, but there were allegations of bizarre behavior on his part at some Indian casinos.
Yeah, he got kicked out. He.
Kicked out of an Indian casino? What the hell? They don't kick anybody out of those damn places.
You don't know Michael Del Giorno.
That's pretty frightening. Seriously, I mean, come on. Just to be kicked out of a casino, period, Indian or not. you really have to be doing some major mess to be kicked out of a casino.
Because they want your, because they want your money.
Abso-friggin-lutely they do.
And they'll put, and they'll put up, and they'll put up with a whole bunch of anything.
Yes, because as you know, Mama gambles, and I have seen some pure D, straight up crazy in the casino, and I'm just sitting there going, "You so lucky I don't own this bitch, because you would have been gone a whole long time ago." So that's what I'm saying. I mean, I've, especially when they get drunk. Oh my God. And you're, you know, and they're yelling at the, you know, these people are yelling at the top of their lungs, that, and they've won $5. It's like, really?
You know, some, it just takes, some people.
I mean, not to discount $5, because, hey, I know sometimes, hey, but, I mean, the way they hoop and holler, you would think that they won, you know, at least 10.
I will never forget, I was down at a meeting, and it had been held at a casino in Tunica, Mississippi, Stan. And on the way out, I was literally leaving that morning, and I was walking. I was walking because you know they make you walk across the, you know, the casino floor. And I took, I took a $5 bill and put it in the machine. Had no idea what I was doing. It's slots. Had no idea what I was doing. And just pushed max bet.
And what happened?
And my $5 turned into $100. And I took my little ticket and I ran to the window and I cashed it in and I ran out the door.
Kept going. And that's the way you do it.
Apparently that's not that the way you
exactly
do it.
How
I mean, they'd go out of business if that was the way you did it.
Well, you know, they don't like people like you, Bob, but you know what? That's what it drives them crazy because I do the same thing to a certain extent. And I do, you know, I will win X amount of money and then I will disappear.
Because I know better than to think I've got any kind of luck.
Oh, yeah, no, don't do that. Don't do that. You'll just get your feelings hurt.
Yeah, my wallet emptied. I mean, that was, God, what, 4 or 5 years ago?
And that's the last time you were in a casino?
Yeah.
You're not
missing
anything.
Was that in Vegas?
No. Tunica, Mississippi.
Oh.
Oh, that's right down from Memphis.
That's a Harris property. I know they have. I know in Tunica they have.
Yeah, we were staying at Harris.
Okay, that's what I thought. Yeah, because we were just talking about the idiocy that is the South, and she's because you know about the whole North. She's so proud of herself because she's paying more attention to politics because you know of me. And she's like, baby, did you hear? There's another company that pulled out of North Carolina. I'm like, Wasn't North Carolina or South Carolina that just got the NCAA back? Who was that?
It was the NCAA. It was North Carolina, wasn't it?
Well, they were in Indiana.
Well, because somebody just got, you know, because it's like you just got this, you know, NCAA back, okay, as far as, you know, champions, you know, March Madness and whatnot and so forth a minute ago. And now this mess, seriously?
Are you talking about the NBA All-Star game that's going to be at Charlotte next year?
They pulled out as well, but there was another state that did some stupid mess. And the NCAA said, okay, well, you're stupid, and we're not going to have any more, you know.
That was Indiana Stan.
Oh, that was Indiana Stan. Okay.
Yeah.
People just don't learn, do they?
No. No. I mean, that's like...
It's just...
I mean, we've got 3 casinos in West Virginia. and one's in Charleston at the dog track, another one's in Wheeling at the dog track, and the other one's over in Charlestown at the horse track. And you know, that's proof that people never learn. I mean, there's 10,000. I was at another meeting once, even longer ago, at the one up in Wheeling. Boss Man Wayne and I went up there, and I thought I was going to lose my mind just listening to 10,000 machines making all those goddamn noises.
Yeah.
I mean, they want to torture people at Guantanamo. Just set up some slot machines in there and let them play that stupid fucking music over and over and over again.
Shit, it's like when you leave one of the places, like when we did our trip to Vegas in 2005, you leave the place and you hear them damn slot machines in your sleep.
And don't for a minute think that that's not designed. I mean, there's one of my very favorite episodes of The Twilight Zone concerns a really morally upright, God-fearing older couple who wins a free trip to Vegas.
Oops.
And of course, you know, he's like, you know, some sort of hard-shell Baptist or something. And when he walks in, they hand him, you know, this is back when slots had slots and you had to put money in them.
And they gave you the cup.
And they gave him like a silver dollar. And he puts it in the machine and he wins. And he declares, "This is ill-gotten gain and I cannot go home with this money in my pocket, for it is against God's will."
Oh, God.
And I don't want to ruin it for anybody, but I can't. Somebody out there knows the name of the episode. But I'll just say that the good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered character's name was Franklin. Yeah. And so I have permission. Thank you very kindly to Randy for answering Ralph's challenge. And further thanks go out to Mike in Washington. And to you, Charlie, thank you very kindly. So we are now, we're kind of on the way. That would make it. We're halfway to getting to that $300 and $250 for reaching the $400 threshold.
A little birdie told me that there's a special delivery arriving from Arizona Stan very shortly.
Oh, at the mailbox.
Yeah, a little birdie.
A little birdie, yes.
Yeah.
Right. I will tell. I'll tell Boss Man Wayne he can leave the spider fruit gloves in his box in his truck, and just take the ball bat with him in case he runs into the Klan.
Yeah. Okay.
Do they actually have some identification on their mailbox that says Klan on the front of it, or what?
No, Charlie. It's the Klan. They're a bunch of dumbasses. So what they've been doing is they've sprung for some Ziploc bags, and they're pouring white rice in the bags, and they put a little piece of paper with their name and address on it in the bag, and they fling it on people's porches.
Huh.
And so they are the Klan, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive. PMB 181, Beckley WV 25801. Whereas we're 318.
I had that picture saved somewhere, but I can't seem to find it.
If you find it, post it in the chat. Yeah, I mean, if I just lived a life of indolent boredom, I'd just maybe go and camp out there on a Saturday and Sunday, because you know you can go in there and you know get your, but nobody's at work, right? I just kind of camp out there and see who's doing it and take some pictures and publicize it. Oh, Tracy, is that your new lavatory? Your new vanity? That's it. Yeah. Oh, that's lovely. You're going for the spare sort of Scandinavian motif, I take it?
She must not be hearing you or something.
I don't know. Maybe she's gone deeper into Orange County.
Well, she hasn't lost the call. She's still on the call.
Wow.
You didn't hear me because I was on mute. Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now. Yes, you're going for okay. You're going for the sort of spare Scandinavian motif.
Yeah, and I said okay. So what I was saying, I forgot that I had the phone on mute. I said, oh yeah, I'm wearing very clean and very white. I'm like, oh, that does not sound right. I know that was.
That's on you. That is on you,
it's
sister.
That is all me. I can't put that on anybody. I basically did a John Kasich there with the blood of the lamb.
Post.
What is this?
You know, the thing is, I know that when Will and Betsy get around to listening to this program, I'm going to.
Oh, they're going to scream.
Yeah. That's
I was like, when you guys, because when you were trying to figure stuff out, and I couldn't, the only thing I could get out, because I was driving, so I was speaking and texting, you know, voice text or whatever. So that's all I could get out without screaming. And I'm like, fucking doorpost, you maroon.
What a maroon. What a non-com poop.
It's like, God. Damn. I guess I was trying to say, I don't know if you guys heard me. I'm just like, was he at a Jews for Jesus? Maybe he thought he was at a Jews for Jesus meeting. I don't know. It's just the nerve. That's that Christian hubris. I know all. And I'm
yeah, that's the Christian nice version things. Of this is why we can't have nice things.
Yes, this is why we can't have nice things. This is why we can't take you anywhere. You know, we can't take you to nice places because you don't know how to behave. You jag off.
Just a damn minute. All of a sudden you sound like you're from Pittsburgh.
I'm sorry. It's just when I get riled up and it just, you never know what dialect will come out. And what accent.
Tracy, I don't think you're going to have a... Do you do a Yiddish accent by any...
Oy vey. He's such a schmuck. It's just...
She's lining.
She's lining. I meant she's not.
Are you for Klimt?
I'm for Klimt. Yes. It's just... I look at these people and I listen to these people. I kind of heard that the other day with John Kasich, and I'm like, "Oh, homie, no, don't do it, don't do it." Oh,
and oh, then my he favorite did it.
With the audio that you played earlier mm-hmm. was our man Bill about that black guy down in Mississippi. If he's so fucking important, you don't even know his motherfucking name.
Yeah,
asshole.
Did anybody not notice that? There's this progressive African American in Jacksonville, Mississippi.
I thought he said it was the black guy. He said African American.
No, he said African American. Part of the reason she won in Mississippi was because they have a progressive African American mayor in Jacksonville. Jacksonville. Mm-hmm. Jacksonville. There is no Jacksonville, Mississippi.
I didn't think so. When he said Jacksonville, I'm like, wait a minute. As little as I tried to know about Mississippi. I know there's no Jacksonville. I know there's a Jackson. But see, you know, listening to like, you know, with North, you know, between Mississippi and North Carolina. Oh, that's another thing. Jan is on a rant about my mother because my mother's being my mother. And of course, when they passed that law, she's like, well, I guess because, you know, my mom lives in North Carolina. And she's like, well, I'm pretty sure your mom is happy now. I said, you know, I don't know about that. But what I do know...
Oh, no, wait a minute. We haven't started on the in-laws now, have we?
Oh, no, she just... Well, see, my mom... My Jan loves my mom as I do, but we just don't like my mother right now.
That really doesn't... Parent-child dynamics, that really probably requires no further explanation. A lot of us have been there.
Yeah. Well, see, what's happening is... Long story short, y'all know I got married. Some of you even watched the wedding. My mother's an ordained minister, and I asked her to perform my ceremony, but she, of course, she couldn't because, you know, I'm a fag. I mean, no, what am I? She called me a fag, but I'm actually a lesbian, so let's get that straight.
No, she did not. Shut the front door.
So then she didn't use those words, but she, you know, it was bad. So anyhow, we kind of calmed ourselves down. So then a couple of months back, my sister, who has lived with her boyfriend for 8 years, is not living in sin?
In sin, I was going to say. In sin, in Alameda, I don't know where.
Okay, so then my sister calls me all excited in January to tell me that her, you know, she's engaged because she said she'd never get married. And I'm like, okay, I knew she would. But anyway, so she's engaged. And, of course, mommy's going to perform the marriage ceremony. And I smiled and gritted my teeth, and I'm like, oh, that's so nice.
How nice? Right? Because okay. Wait.
Because my mom is always the one that says, you know.
Tracy, lessons in Southern. That's where
you. Person. So that's regardless where, that's, of what that, your sin is.
Yeah, Tracy, that's know? Where you just say, how nice.
That's that Bible talking shit, right?
Yeah. How nice.
Exactly.
Say it with me, Tracy.
How nice.
Got to slow it down real good and make it real sweet. How nice.
How nice. Is that better?
You got it. I'll tell you the story that goes with that in a minute.
So then, I thought about it because of course she wants me at the wedding. I thought about it, and I knew. Cause, and another thing, my mom did absolutely nothing for me on my wedding day. You know, if any woman who's ever gotten married or thought about getting married, one of the highlights of the whole wedding is that mother-daughter time, right? That in the planning and the picking of the dress, whatever. She participated as little as possible. And I'm like, okay. So I called her because I called her and said, you know, are you gonna do, you know? And I said, I'm trying not to make this about me, but I'm also knowing that it would devastate me. Because like I said, it's not about me, it's about my sister. But I know Rachel knows a shit ton of people. My mother could walk her down the aisle, whatever. You know what I'm saying? Just please. And so my mother went off on me. She's like, why do you always play the victim? And said, oh, well, you know, you're always blaming me for everything that's wrong in your life. Oh, she just went on and on and on. And as a result, I haven't spoken to my mother since January. If she's tried to, I just can't do it.
That's painful. I'm so sorry, Tracy. I mean, we kid, we carry on, but that's painful.
Yeah, it was bad. So anyhow, I was like, okay, you know what? And then my mother's made attempts, but I just can't do it right now. And I have issues with other family members. And I, like I said, I know that there's going to be a difference in the wedding ceremony for my sister as opposed to mine. Because let's face it, nobody really feels that my marriage is legitimate. In the members of my family. I know this. And I know the celebration for my sister.
What do they think? You've lived 50 years on the planet and you're now playing house?
Pretty much. And so...
Show them that fucking stove.
Right. It's not installed yet. It's going to be delivered on the 28th, and I will have pictures of my new kitchen on the 20th. I will post that shit. I will actually, let's see, the 28th is on the last Thursday in April, so on the 29th, will there be a front porch? I will post that shit in the chat room on the 29th. But, so, you know, when I planned my wedding in December 2 years ago, I made sure I planned it around December, so like people who had kids can come during vacation. Now, my brother did not bring his family to my wedding. But guess what? He sure as shit is bringing them to my sister's wedding.
Of course.
Now, he's in Georgia. Now, my sister's in Oregon. So he's flying. He's bringing it. By the way, he was supposed to be coming to spend the summer with me, sometime this summer with me. But of course, now, since Rachel's getting married... And yes, I know I'm probably sounding petty. I know I am, to a certain extent. But when there's a marked difference in how I'm treated as opposed to my sister, and so, you know, I told her that I wasn't coming. I used the excuse because, you know, and it really wasn't an excuse because, you know, Jan was going to have hip surgery and, you know, well, that was before the hip surgery. But, you know, June is a really busy time of the year for Jan and it's just too hard. And so,
you know what? I think you would have been well within your rights if you said you was going to get your hair did.
Oh, no, I got one better. I don't know if you know, but I'm having I think you read my post. I'm having surgery on my legs.
Right.
And even though it's an in-office procedure, I can't travel because of, you know, blood clots. And I told Jan, I said, isn't that a set? So I called my sister a couple of days ago and said, she knows why I'm not coming because she knows I'm not speaking to my mother and I'm not really speaking to anybody. And I said, well, I'm pretty sure that there's a running bet that I'm not coming to your wedding and, you know, blah, blah, blah. I said, well, now I have spread the word. I have a legitimate excuse. I can't fly. And she's like, but sis, I said, she's like, I don't expect for you to be there because of your, I said, look.
Oh, this is an awful time to lose. Right?
I'm volatile. And I am a reactionary. And if one person says or looks at me the wrong way, I'm going to fucking lose it. And I'd rather not do that in public and at your wedding. It's not about me. I'd rather just stay home. So I'm not going to my sister's wedding. I don't really like my family right now, Bob.
Well, see, but Tracy, the lovely thing is you just said something, Tracy. You said, I'm not really talking to much of anybody right now. But you know what? You're talking to us.
Yeah, so see, and this is what I love about, see, here's the deal. And I have been, you know, teetering on the edge for a past few months with, you know, the move and school and now Jan having to have hip replacement surgery, me having to have surgery on my legs. I have been teetering. But see, the good thing is I have my folks. I have you guys. I have my Horn family. I have my church family. And I have a family that I made of my own. You know, some of the best family that anybody has ever had are the people that you choose to be your family.
Friends are the family you make for yourself.
It's abso-freaking-lutely. And I thank God and goodness or Buddha, whoever, whatever God, whoever you pray to or not pray to. I thank God for the people that I have met over the last many years on Facebook because of you. I posted a stupid thing about this post this guy wrote about these, I guess, in Messenger that people send you messages that you never received. I had over 200 messages from people who congratulated me on my wedding day. The people who I never even met, who read some of the stuff that I posted.
Yeah, I saw that. I got to figure out how to do that.
You go into your phone. I could actually walk you through this shit. You go into your phone into the Messenger app, and then or Messenger, you know, from Facebook, and you go into settings, and then you click people, and then you go to message requests, and then you see, and then you click on see filtered requests, and all these messages will come up. I have messages going back to 2009, Bob. Yeah, some of them are spam. Yes, some of them are spam, but a lot of them were not. Some of them were like people asking me for rides. There was some really cool stuff about like taking back Wisconsin. This was from 2011.
So you go on your Facebook page.
Oh my God.
Hello.
Now, a lot of them are apparently Nigerian widows.
Not of them are, okay. But if you keep going through them, there's a. I found one. This woman, somebody that heard me on your show, Bob.
Damnation! Here's one from Tim.
Oh God. So how does this work, Tracy? You go into Facebook and then under messages, and you go into filtered messages.
Go into Messenger and then go into filtered message. You go into Facebook, into Messenger, then you go into people, and it'll say message request. You click on message request. And then you open up, and it'll see filtered requests.
Okay.
And there's a shit ton of messages.
Okay, I'll try to remember that.
Bob, see, look, how many messages, I mean, and it goes, basically, it goes all the way to the day that you opened your Facebook account. So I have messages from 2009.
I'm back in 2013.
Uh-huh.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Some of the messages you get back.
Yeah, modern technology. We have all this technology, but look at what's going on.
Bob,
humanity, right?
Bob,
I mean, I had some really cool messages. I was like, I was undone.
Okay, Bob, okay, Bob. Okay. So this is this is just getting weird. There's a lot of apparently fish messages from me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, I had some of those recently. Yeah. Anyway, Bob, I wanted to mention something briefly. I just came on. I'm outside doing errands. It's an absolutely beautiful day outside. I ran into one of my friends who's a political observer like I am, political junkie like I'm not now, and I asked him about Sanders. And I asked him, did he think that Sanders was going to get the nomination? He said, well, he's not going to get the nomination, trust me. And I said, why do you feel that way? And he said, because he waited too long to go negative on Clinton, and there's a Southern African-American, he said black, but I'm going to say African-American, a Southern African-American firewall that is going to keep him from getting the nomination. And I wanted to open that up for discussion with the group and see what the people the people in the chat room would say. Because, you know, I don't know what you think about that, Bob, or what anybody thinks about
that. Wait, hold up. Are you saying that there's a Southern African-American, this group, black folks from the South, is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Black folks from the South are keeping what?
Their support of Clinton is going to keep, that's one of the factors other than the Democratic Party keeping him from getting the nomination, and also the fact that he waited too long to go negative on Hillary Clinton.
Okay. As far as black people from the South, with all the gerrymandering and voter ID registration and all this stuff, there's probably not going to be that many black people who can vote down south. I'm just saying that it would not be that make much of a difference.
Uh-huh.
I'm just saying on that one. I mean, just the fact that how many black people cannot vote who are entitled to vote in the South. I mean, I seriously don't think that there. Unfortunately, the black vote, I mean, is very strong. We need more black people to vote for Bernie Sanders. But I mean, if anything, it's more than. I mean, it's the media coupled with Hillary Clinton, her camp keeping people from hearing about Bernie, because like people, who was it that said that CNN and all the, you know, the pro-profit media is doing their best to keep him out of the news cycle, and people, you know, but thank God we have social media. We have people out there talking about Bernie. That doesn't matter what the news is saying. I guess it would help if the news did more for Bernie, but there's enough. Bob, wasn't it last week that you said, or the week before, how the African American, there's more, or was it me, that there's more black people or people of color voting for Bernie than they thought would be?
Yes. That,
so, you know, I think a lot of these people are so hell bent on Hillary winning that they're just doing out and out straight up lying. I went to, in 2008, I mean, but it's just, see, I'm not saying that he's lying. What I'm saying is, like, you guys were talking about somebody that called her a whore, a media whore, what? A whore to the Wall Street or whatever. And it was attributed to Bernie, but he didn't say it. And so because, like you said, we're doing the work of the Clinton campaign by saying stuff like that. I remember when I was out in 2008, when I was in Nevada, helping with the Nevada caucus for Barack Obama, and I was there, and I was watching the Hillary people. They, when people came up to this, they were sending them to different addresses. They were, you know, chaining doors shut closing the doors early so people couldn't come in. It was, and I'm sitting there watching this firsthand. This is not innuendo. This is not a rumor. I saw the shit. And I'm like, holy cow. Those are the same people 8 years ago who were making sure that people couldn't get to caucus or vote or do whatever they could do for Barack Obama. And now they're doing the same thing for Bernie Sanders. The bitch don't, she hasn't evolved much from that, has she? Or her supporters 8 years later?
Yeah, but we got some real evolving. Wait, time out. We got some real straight up evolving last night, though. Did you hear that evolve button getting the shit knocked out of it?
Which
she's all for the, she's all in on the fight for 15 now.
Oh, for shit's sake, really?
And said there and looked at that crowd, and didn't even sweat or anything, and said, I have always been for a $15 minimum wage, and lightning didn't strike her or nothing.
See, this is what I need. Remember the what was that movie, The Bad Seed? Remember the end of The Bad Seed? Anybody? Come on, nobody saw The Bad Seed.
Is that the Anthony Burgess? Anyway, there's a book.
No, the little girl Rhoda, the one that she kills people. But anyway, at the end of the movie, she gets struck by lightning and gets killed. But
could I just interject something here before we run out of time?
See? Oh yeah, that's right. There's only 8 minutes left.
Did anybody see Bernie at the Vatican today?
I didn't get to see it.
No, didn't get to see it. I didn't see the debate yesterday.
Sitting right next to the president from Bolivia at the conference. And if you know, the president of the Bolivia is one of the leading climate activists in the world.
Yes, Evo Morales, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I just thought that, and then they mobbed him when he tried to, he left the Vatican. The press mobbed him. I mean, they encapsulated.
But when I asked Grant and Lottie and Carol, they all said Bernie was great. Hillary lied. That's what they said. So take their word for it, Dunk. Take their word for it.
The debate last night?
Yes.
Yeah, but I just thought the visuals today for Bernie were pretty excellent. Going to the Vatican, I wish you could have. He would have met the Pope. I don't know if he did or not.
I wonder how much press it's going to get. You know, that's a good question, isn't it? How much are they going to show this on the boob tube?
None.
But the European press sure mobbed him.
Unfortunately, Europeans can't vote for our president or vote in the primary.
Yes.
And the other side of that is... the desperate attempt of the Hilarians to diminish the importance of this. I was told today that, well, it's not like he really went to the Vatican. It's just some college that the Vatican gives money to sometimes.
My God.
Well, it's the same thing like Bill saying, you know, just saying that it was a big deal for Hillary to win the South. Again, when was the last time a Democratic president was elected because of the votes in the South?
Like never.
Bueller?
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So for her to win, like I told Jan, you know, Jan was all up and up. Well, she's going to vote for Hillary. I know she is. I said, that's your choice, baby. Go ahead and vote for her in the primary. I said, but she's like, well, she won the South. I said, sweetie pie, honey. This is when, you know, that education comes in. Not one Democratic president, whoever has won
the South,
never carried the South. We don't carry the South. The last time a Democrat won the South was when the Democratic Party was the Republican Party.
I think Jimmy Carter carried some Southern states.
Sama. Did Barack Obama carry any southern states?
No.
Well, okay. I don't know how Hillary got away with saying that for most of the per capita guns that got into New York came from Vermont. She apparently said that to a Long Island crowd, that most of the guns that killed people in New York per capita came from Vermont. She's willing to say anything.
She said that the guns that mostly came from Vermont?
Yes.
Really, yeah, she said
that came up at the debate last night, and it got batted down, basically.
Okay. Thank you.
Wow.
Okay.
You're welcome, baby. That's just, you know, again, I try not to be mean. I try. But the bitch is lying. I mean,
what do you think, Bob? Bob, what? What's going to happen here? You think what's happening in New York? I know he's closing in California. He's within a week ago or so ago. He was within 6 points or 6 percentage points of Hillary's lead.
You're really?
New York. I don't know what's happening in Pennsylvania. What's going on?
Well, I mean, we were talking earlier. I mean, there's some polls showing that he's slipping, not gaining.
There's polls all over the place, everywhere.
Yeah. Well, people have been suggesting that I stay away from the mainstream media for a while in order to keep my sanity. So I'm doing that.
Follow the young Turks.
Thank you.
They're informative and they make you laugh.
There was an excellent interview yesterday with Cenk and Jane Sanders that came out yesterday.
I saw that, yeah. I stay away from the mainstream ones where they endorse Bernie.
By the way, Alex, what's happening in Arizona? Is Bernie going to contest what happened in Arizona?
There's something going on where the... didn't I just hear today that the Clinton camp and the Sanders camp are both suing... They're doing some sort of legal thing in the state of Arizona.
It's the Democratic Party, I think, is suing them.
Oh, the Democratic. Something's going on here. There's some something about the Arizona situation.
Yeah, they want it to.
I don't know what happened. I sent in mine by early ballot, and I don't even know if they screwed around with mine. You know, I have no idea.
No, yeah.
They're going to screw California.
Duncan, Tracy, do you think they're going to screw around with our... If I get my early ballot, it'll be counted, right, if I send it in early?
Yeah, we're in California, sweetie.
California, it works different.
Your vote's going to get counted, Larry.
Okay, good.
We're in California. We don't have to worry about any of the bullshit in California that these other... This is... When I hear about the stuff that's going on in these other states, yet another reason why I'm not leaving California. I mean, I toy with the idea of moving maybe to Oregon or to Washington, but I can't. I don't like the rain. I like the sunshine. I mean, like right now, it's a beautiful day. It's 67 degrees.
I lived in Oregon and I lived in Washington, and it was if you have to like about 10 months out of the year of darkness and rain, then that's the place for you.
And I'm bipolar. Yeah, that's not happening. I would be a basket case.
Oh, forget it. It was horrible.
No, I mean, I go visit. You know, I could stay there for about a week or so, maybe. Yeah, I did, about a week. I could do that.
Okay, guys. It's time.
By God, it is, isn't it? It so is. Oh, yeah, got a minute to go. See what happens? See what you guys do? We get a rousing conversation going, and I stop looking at the clock. But, you know, that's the magic of Friday on the Front Porch. So thank you for joining in, Larry and Alex and Charlie and Tracy and Jules and Rick. I don't know if he ever got back from his client call or not. And thank you for your usual magnificent job of extraordinary, ordinary roundtable hosting, Sparky. I will note that the conversation will continue after the program ends. Thanks, everybody, for a wonderful week's broadcasting. We will close the broadcast with about $150 to $250 to go in fundraising. Hopefully that will clear up over the weekend, and then we'll start next week and see what happens there. Again, thank you all for a wonderful week, and thank you for sharing your precious finite time. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all, and have a great weekend.